Welcome to this episode of Statum, a podcast for clinical partners. I'm your host, Richard Schooley. Every week, we'll produce a new episode to keep you informed and connect dots that may not be apparent. The episodes will be short, hopefully a good commute companion, and downloadable on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. I encourage you to subscribe. In today's episode, we'll talk with Dr. Cindy Firkin-Smith and Dr. Jill Amsbury about the new medical school. The University of Minnesota Regents recently approved CenterCare as one of three medical school campuses in Minnesota. We're going behind the scenes with Cindy and Jill today to learn more about the med school from a clinical partner's perspective. I'd like to welcome Dr. Cindy Firkin-Smith and Dr. Jill Amsbury to the podcast today. You two, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Richard. Glad to be here.
Looking forward to having this conversation about the med school with the two of you. Jill, I'm coming to you first. I understand that clinical partners were recently surveyed to gauge their interest in participating in the med school and perhaps also to express their concerns. I'm curious, what is it that you've learned?
Yeah, it's been really fun to see those surveys come back because we really get the chance to see the breadth of experience that exists within our organization, and not just in the St. Cloud area, but all across the region. So, you know, people are responding with individual expertise that they may have had in their, you know, prior life or prior jobs or early training, or a special interest that they may have for the future. And that is really fun to see, too, because all of those gifts that our faculty have will help to shape our students. So that's been really fun to see as well.
Another thing that's been really fun, Richard, is that we have late career physicians and retired physicians that are saying, why didn't you do this 10 years later or 10 years earlier? And we said, well, we're doing it now. And how do you want to be involved? So we have physicians that are so excited about this, they want to come back to us and give back in ways that we hadn't considered. So we're looking into how we can develop a program to, as Jill said, utilize the gifts of all of our clinicians, no matter where they are in their career.
Yeah, and those that do have concerns, the concerns typically come from, gosh, I already have students, how are we going to take on more students? So there's that concern for learner saturation. So the first thing I mention is that this is going to be 24 students per year, with the first class starting in 2025 and matriculating in 2029. And so, 24 students spread across our whole organization. I don't know that each individual person will feel the impact, but I certainly hope that each individual person will feel the positive impact that bringing students in and bringing an academic center into our health system, what that can do for our health system. And there's studies on this. They describe it as a halo effect, right? So you bring academic centers into communities and actually the outcomes improve in those communities.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that? What does the research say?
Well, I don't think it's terribly surprising, right? So when I have students with me, one, they keep me on my toes. They make sure that right. I'm up to date, right, on the greatest research. And I think there's just a feeling of academia and insurance of evidence-based care. And so our job, as we have been doing for a long time, providing evidence-based medicine, now we need to provide evidence-based medical education, which is something that we have not necessarily been doing over the last several years as we've had students come through. We kind of do it the way that we were taught to do it. And there's newer research, just like in medicine, there's newer research in medical education saying that maybe we don't have to do it exactly the way that we've done it before. And in fact, we can deliver it in sometimes a more efficient way and with more efficacy.
And part of that, too, is the research opportunities, Richard. As part of our affiliation or our joint venture with the University of Minnesota, we're creating a rural research institute as well. There are plenty of clinical studies out there that our patients don't get the opportunity to participate in because they're restricted
right.
based on geography. And so part of enhanced healthcare or making sure our patients have the ability to get you know, up-to-date translational research is to bring that closer to them. So again, that's going to exist where it didn't exist before. So we're very excited about creating that in our rural communities. And, you know, what we're doing here is a research opportunity. If we can create the best way to educate rural students to become right. rural clinicians, that is a challenge all across the United States. And when you go out and look for data, I mean, Jill and I have been on the phone talking to other healthcare communities and other academic institutions about how they've done it. And we hear a lot of reports and anecdotes, but we don't get a lot of data. There's not a lot of really good data about what's successful. Well, we intend to research what we're doing and publish it so other people can learn from our experiences and we can find ways to build the rural healthcare pipeline across the country.
I love that. I have a question too about that. Are there other either state universities or university systems that are partnering with a healthcare system as University of Minnesota and CentraCare are?
Not like this.
No kidding.
This is absolutely the first time a collaboration like this has ever been done. And so that's what makes it really exciting, really novel, and really, really worth studying and publishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the opportunity to participate in a conference of rural medical campuses. And I asked that question to everyone that I met. And, I also asked what their greatest challenges were. And yeah. one of the greatest challenges at regional medical campuses across the country is finding healthcare institutions who will partner with them.
No kidding.
And therefore finding the preceptors who will partner with them to teach their students. And then the last thing is learner saturation. So many of these regional medical campuses have a multitude of medical schools, nurse practitioner schools. And when I say learner saturation, I mean that each provider at their health system is taking on 3 students at a time. And so I know that some people may feel like here at CentraCare, we have some learner saturation. And I would say one, we're working on that to make sure that the learners that we have coming through our organization fit our mission, that they really fit our future of practicing rural care. Mm. And then the other thing is that if they don't, we want them to have an excellent education, but this may not be the place for them, right. particularly with, you know, their future may not fit our mission, right?
And you have 3-4 years to establish that right. together, right?
Right. That's right.
Cindy?
You know, what people don't or haven't thought about, Richard, is the opportunity for our rural students. Jill mentioned this earlier, that only 4% of medical students come from a rural background. And according to the most recent data from the University of Minnesota Medical School, only 2% of that medical school class in both Duluth and the main campus come from West Central and Southwest Minnesota. That's only 2%. We've got a lot of students out here who want to be doctors, and they're not getting in mm-hmm. to medical school. We know that the best way to create a rural doc is to give birth to them, raise them up, educate them close to home, and bring them home to serve their communities, but they're not being given that opportunity. So we intend mm-hmm. to work with our local school systems, starting in elementary school if we need to identify students that have the potential. We're going to work with middle schools and junior highs and high schools and undergraduate colleges to identify these students and create pathways and pipelines for those students and support them as they want to follow or pursue healthcare careers.
Yeah, and for our clinical partners, just to sort of provide some data to what Cindy's saying, we did a little bit of a research over the last 10 years to identify what the students looked like that came from this area that entered the University of Minnesota. And there were 51 students over the last 10 years that came from this region. 38 of them chose Duluth as their campus, and 13 the Twin Cities.
Really?
Yeah. And we had 19 of those students eventually choose family medicine, 8 internal medicine, 1 peds, 1 internal medicine pediatrics, 3 surgeons, 5 entered emergency trauma, 4 OB, and 3 psych. So the bulk of these individuals were entering into the specialties, though we need all specialties in rural Minnesota. I mean, we really right. need primary care, emergency care, OB care, psychiatry. And we see that the students that were coming from this region, even though it was only 10%, they chose Duluth as their campus, and they came out mm-hmm. into primary care.
I got a couple of names floating in my head right now about who that might be. I think that's so exciting. So when you talk about pathways and pipelines, yep. right, that's a long-term picture. But Jill, what you're talking about is there already is a pipeline. There are already kids, yeah. right, who want to be docs, who want to be nurses, who, et cetera, who are choosing this path. And you want to give them another option. There's Duluth, there's Twin Cities, and now there's going to be CentraCare.
Yep,
that's right.
Do I have a choice like that? I can choose one of these three campuses?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. So the admissions process is actually being redone at the University of Minnesota. Historically, there were sort of separate admissions processes for Duluth and the Twin Cities. But they are, just like their curriculum has evolved to one curriculum, three campuses, their admissions mm-hmm. process will be the same. So one admissions process for three campuses. But there will be bits within that admissions process that will help both the student and those within the admissions program at the University of Minnesota help make sure that students are placed in a location that serves their future interests best. Exactly how that will work, I think, is really still being developed. And the exciting thing is that we get to have a part of that.
Right.
And prior to this, we didn't have any part in that. So.
Yeah. I love it. You guys, I don't have to tell you that a number of your colleagues and physicians overall have a healthy dose of skepticism, right? There's a yeah. there's a fantastic intellect. There's a curiosity. There's also a sense of like looking at this kind of side-eyed, whatever it happens to be, which I think is excellent. I mean, you have to, especially these days, you have to squint to see what's the truth here. So if we speak just to those skeptics for a moment, what have you heard is their skepticism, and how would you reply to them?
The skepticism that I think Jill and I have heard most of is people are concerned that adding, as she already said, that we might be saturating ourselves with too many students, and that people who commit to the teaching mission might have challenges with reimbursement because we're primarily on an RVU reimbursement model, or they might have challenges with quality of life and just take too much time. Mm-hmm. And so we're addressing all of those things. Jill already spoke to the fact that we are looking at our outcomes. We are truly committed that every healthcare professional gets the education they need. But our mission is going to be training healthcare professionals, including medical students who are committed to rural practice locations. So right. especially West Central and Southwest Minnesota. And so it really doesn't make any sense for us to train kids from New York City unless they grew up here, you know, and want to come back. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be looking at that. And we're working right now with a consultant called ECG on income mm-hmm. formulas, not just for to address our medical school mission, but also to address just changes that are happening within the marketplace we live in, right? We're moving to value-based contracting, which is a very different way to pay healthcare organizations than, you know, fee-for-service,
right.
and we're creating team-based care models, which is a very different way to deliver care that we did the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. And so we're adding the medical school mission to those two changes and determining what changes in our reimbursement model will help support all of those changes in the world that we live in. And so we are committed to ensuring that the physicians who want to teach can fulfill that mission and that purpose and not suffer, you know, life-changing reductions in their reimbursement. So no one gets rich in teaching. We all know that. And I think Jill will accept that. Everyone who has ever done it has done it because it's they're purpose-driven. You know, they want to give back. Someone taught them. They know, as Jill says, that teaching makes you a better doctor. And so it's a very good way to stay on top of things and to stay up to date. But it's purpose-driven. Mm-hmm. And if we can focus on purpose, that's the way to come to work every day and feel like you're really making a difference in the world. And so we want to make sure that people find that purpose that works for them. And I'd love to hear what Jill has to say, because she's always far better at explaining this than I am.
No, not at all. But I would say, obviously we all find purpose in caring for the patients that we serve.
Right.
That's why we went into medicine. And for many people within the organization, that is what fills their cup. And teaching students doesn't do that for them. And mm-hmm. so adding students to their work may feel burdensome.
Sure.
And so for them, they will support the academic mission by helping to continue to see the patients. The patients are going to be there, adding students or not, they need to be seen. But then there are other people within our organization, like Cindy and myself, for example,
right.
who really find passion and life in teaching and in medical education. And for them, they actually will leave their day better off by having a student with them.
Energized, and so, right? Yeah.
Yes. So for those people, that portion, in addition to caring for the patient, really gives them life. And again, this is 24 students per year. And so, I really believe that, and it's particularly based on the survey results and the amount of feedback that we're getting from our clinical partners, that we will have plenty of people that find medical education purposeful and something that will hopefully give them a little bit of life back into their daily work, which sometimes can feel like you're sort of on a gerbil wheel of medicine.
I can imagine. I also love, part of our podcast purpose is to connect dots. And I love, Cindy, your comment about how important it is to connect the dots. There are lots of dots that are being connected. I had a conversation with Dr. Ben Haag and with Sean Wary the other day about you guys, right, and the compensation at PCAC being discussed around how do we compensate for, one of their terms was uncompensated work. And then they mentioned, for instance, the med school subgroup. So you guys are already thinking about this. Right.
Yeah, which actually is not the case across the U.S. And so
no.
I am really grateful that our organization is recognizing the importance of that piece to the delivery of this work. There aren't that many organizations that are doing what CentraCare is doing and really recognizing the impact of that currently uncompensated work.
Yeah.
And that'll be part of what we need to share, right? The physicians are generous people. They've given mm-hmm. their lives to caring for others. And
Very
if we can
point.
create a model where there's that happy medium, where we're finding physicians who want to teach and have that purpose and are willing to do it for a reasonable exchange, then that's reasonable. And that's not an unreasonable expectation.
Mm-mm. I also love the hook. I'm going to let you guys go here in a moment, but I love the hook to the primary care transformation and the team-based care. So a conversation recently with Libby Brever and Chris Thompson, you just love their energy for team-based care, but the payoff, right? Like this idea that you don't actually have to go home exhausted. Perhaps
right.
there are other ways to work as a team together, and it looks like it's taken hold and needs to.
Oh, yeah. To get people off that hamster wheel. And imagine adding a medical student to that team. That's a perfect
yeah.
addition to
That's
a healthcare
great.
Team. Yeah. It's just, to me, that is a talk about an optimal learning experience. We want a cross-professional teaching and learning opportunity. And putting a medical student in a team-based care milieu, I can't imagine a better way to do it. And then I think when a student learns that, can you imagine a student wanting to go into a situation where they are on their own, doing everything on their own and running on a hamster wheel all day? I just can't envision that. There's mm-hmm. a better way to live.
Yeah. And interprofessional education is something that from a medical education research perspective is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So that active learning, that engaging with other staff, this is what we do every day mm-hmm. When we're in our clinical worlds. So why are we not teaching in that way? And we need to do a better job of that. So part of the delivery of this medical education experience will include interprofessional education and how we work together to take care of the patients in the best way that we can.
You too. Thank you so much, both for the energy that you bring to this, your passion, the ability to lead this because it is pioneering work, and for all you're doing to create a path forward. Thanks for being here today with us as well.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Next week, we'll hear from Dr. Deb Peterson and Dr. Joe Mercuri about HRO, the high reliability journey. This is not a flavor of the month. In fact, HRO is becoming best practice among many healthcare system peers. We'll begin the HRO conversation with Deb and Joe on the topic of safety from a physician's perspective. One more quick shout out about compensation following last week's episode. You can learn more about this year's value-based measure, clinical documentation timeliness, on one.centricare.com. Click on the compensation tab. Until next time, take good care.